Doc Talk is brought to you by Merck Animal Health. At Merck Animal Health, we're shaping the future of animal health with pioneering science, connected technology, and insights-driven solutions to bring our customers an unparalleled portfolio of choices to improve cattle care and operational efficiency. We support you and your legacy by helping you meet the challenges of today with the innovations of tomorrow.
Hey folks, welcome to Doc Talk. We're going to have a great show today. We have Dr. Nora Schrog. She's going to be on the show. We're going to talk about colostrum, its importance, how to get it, how to use it, how to make sure it's working. Stay tuned. Hey folks, welcome to Doc Talk. I'm Dr. Dan Thompson and I'm here with Dr. Nora Schrog. Dr. Schrog is a veterinarian. She's boarded in pharmacology. She has a PhD from Kansas State University in diagnostic medicine and pathobiology. Tremendous practitioner. And we're going to talk today about colostrum. And, let's just start out by, what is it?
Well, I think colostrum is one of the neatest things because it's so, so important. And that window of time where it's produced is so short. But really, colostrum is the milk a cow produces right when she calves, her first milk. And then as she continues to lactate, that colostrum is most concentrated when they're first gets milked. But then there is a little bit in the later milkings. But essentially, that colostrum is the entire immune system for the calf when they're born. And they have to use that for the first 30 days until they can kind of work on their own immune system. So
we see that too, in the, people run out to tag that calf right off the bat. And, I keep telling them the mom doesn't need a tag to know which calf is hers. So you're saying that first drink that a beef calf takes or the first bottle that dairy calf takes is vital.
Yeah. And timing is vital too. So they need to ingest that colostrum ideally in the first hour that they're born. Because when they're born with their gut essentially open to absorb all those good immune components that are in that colostrum. And we talk about it as IgG right. A lot of times. Right. And there's a few other types, but immunoglobulin is in there and their gut is open to absorb it. But as soon as they're born, and especially as soon as they take their first drink, it starts to close down. And so really that'll slowly decrease their ability to absorb it. And by the time we get to 24 hours, they're really not going to absorb any at all. Right. So getting a dose in when they're 1 to 2 hours old, and then another dose before they're 8 hours old is what we target.
As we're looking at these calves, helping them, if they can't get up, right?
Yeah,
it's helping
for
them
sure.
Get that first drink.
So if anything went wrong or not according to plan, or that calf's born and he doesn't jump up and start sucking, one of the best things you can do is go ahead and get colostrum in him right away. Yeah. And especially when it's as cold as it is now.
Yep. So, I guess the you say the whole immune system's in that first drink or that first milking. What are some of the consequences of not having colostrum?
Yeah, so we can see there have been several long-term studies in both beef and dairy that the overall survival, so death loss, is higher if they don't get colostrum or even enough colostrum. And then milk productivity, reproduction goes down. And your number that you need to treat for respiratory disease or any of the rest of those diseases goes up. So there's really a much longer term consequence than just survival of that calf when he's young.
Yep. And, obviously we focus a lot on the scours issues, and that's one of the first things we ask, isn't it?
Sure, absolutely. And especially navel infections also. Anytime you're getting disease in that first 30 days, you should take a hard look at colostrum. And it's easier to do in dairy calves because they're right there. In beef calves, it can be a little bit challenging. We'll talk about that later.
Perfect. Well, we're off to a great start. Dr. Schrog is extremely knowledgeable in this area, and it's just great to get her to take a break. She's a hard, hard worker and always in demand. And so thanks for being here. Thanks for watching. We'll be right back.
DNA Dialogue is brought to you by Igenity Feeder, powered by Neogen.
There's certainly risk for producers because of the financial stake we have in the cattle operations. that we really need to protect our risk, and especially when there's things outside of our control that are happening in the industry, whether that's the general public or beef-centric issues within our industry, things such as black swan events that we talk about. So what can producers do to help minimize those risks is really very much from individual to individual. If you're able to withstand some of that risk and don't feel like you need to protect yourself, you know, that's a risk management strategy in itself, just saying I'm not gonna have a risk management strategy. I think though for most people, taking into account that these events that may be out of our control, what am I willing to stand and how much risk do I need to protect? So there are ways to do that. Obviously, there's the traditional ways of helping decrease your risk exposure, such as futures. Obviously, there's an LRP program now, as well as options like put and take. So I think if you are at risk of financial catastrophe and can't withstand some of those events that are outside of our control, you should really consider those different strategies. More so on the other side is frankly, one way to manage risk is to always have continuous turnover of cattle and marketing windows across more times of the year. So for example, if I'm always marketing my calves as weaned calves, I'm really at the risk of what is the price every time in the fall on my marketing date. Whereas if I market a few dates, maybe I just slowly transition into going from one marketing date to three, hold on to some of the calves, maybe put some extra weight on them, I spread out my marketing windows. That's one way to also manage risk. If you're a feeder, of course, the other way is you're continuously marketing cattle and continuously refilling those pens. Again, that's a marketing strategy that minimizes risk across different times.
Are you a cattle feeder looking to manage for a stronger and more profitable set of cattle? Look no further than Igenity Feeder. Igenity Feeder utilizes DNA to gain insight into your cattle's genomic potential. With the information to predict performance, quality, and economic endpoints for cattle feeders. Animals are scored and ranked in a simple format, driving more precise and accurate management decisions. Igenity Feeder gives you the power to predict days on feed, manage variability within lots, characterize carcass performance, and focus on metrics important to you and your operation. With the data provided, you will identify superior animals earlier and maintain high operational efficiency. Maximize your profit and optimize performance with Igenity Feeder.
Hey folks, welcome back to Doc Talk. Dr. Dan Thompson here with Dr. Nora Schrog. Dr. Schrog is a veterinarian that is in veterinary practice, all cows, all things cattle and dairy.
I occasionally touch horses and small ruminants, but
and so has just been a great colleague and friend for many, many years, and always amazed to see what she's doing in the next thing in her career. And she's also boarded in pharmacology. She has a PhD in diagnostic medicine and pathobiology, and so someone that you can call and get great information from. When we're talking about colostrum, how do I get it?
So that's a great question. You're gonna milk it out of the cow. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to get it.
Yep.
But when you do that, you wanna be really sure that you're very clean. Because we talked about that colostrum being special. It's got a special concentration of immunoglobulins. It's also got a special concentration of nutrients, which is great for the calf, but it's also great for bacteria.
Oh yeah.
And so when you go to collect that colostrum, you wanna clean the teats off really well, make sure it's a very clean container, milk it out into there, and then you want to, you can store it in the freezer, but you want to get it there really quickly.
Yep.
Even 10 minutes of sitting on the counter can make a difference. You don't want to let that temperature change. You want to get it frozen quickly.
Gotcha. So which animal do I pick? So do I just run out and whichever one?
Yeah,
you know?
That's a great question. So there's a lot of variation between individual animals, but then we generally think that heifers are going to have lower quality colostrum because they haven't lived as long, they haven't seen as many diseases, they don't have as good of an immune system to put into that colostrum. So you're going to want a mature cow, and then you don't want the old skinny one in the back probably either, right? Yeah. So a middle-aged cow is a good candidate. But really, a lot of times, our opportunity on a beef operation to collect colostrum is that cow who you pulled the calf and the calf was dead. So some of those, sometimes it's about the cow that's available as much as anything. Just know that a heifer is probably not your ideal candidate to save it.
Yep. Yep. And so, you know, but it's better than nothing.
Way better than nothing. Yeah. Way better than nothing.
Yeah. So, storing it, then you say you can store it.
Yeah. So you can store it in the freezer up to a year.
Okay.
And the trick is to get it thawed out. And so when you store it, I usually tell people store it in Ziploc bags, and you want to store it in a small volume. So a lot of times a quart Ziploc bag is easy. It'll thaw out quickly, and then you don't have to thaw out too much, because what you don't want to do is thaw it out and then not use that and refreeze it. And a lot of these little beef calves, some of the times you need to supplement colostrum, they might be twins, so they're small calves. So a lot of times a quart Ziploc bag is a good idea.
Yep. And I like them when they stack easy.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of surface area, so they thaw out.
Yeah, because you want to thaw them in hot water, not in the microwave.
Right, right. And then, you know, how much do you recommend we give a calf?
Yeah, so 10% of their body weight is the recommendation, but the real big challenge is it really depends, volume-wise, it really depends on how concentrated that colostrum is. So in dairy calves, we know the dairy cow colostrum is not as concentrated. A lot of times we'll give those calves 2 gallons. So a 100-pound calf is going to get 2 gallons.
Yep.
In beef cows, we know that they're not going to get that much volume generally. Basically, we're going to give them all we can.
So at the end of the day, get it to them early. Get them a volume, 10% of their body weight. Pick a cow that's 3 to 4 years old.
Yep. Yeah.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
It's great information. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the colostral supplements that are on the market, how you can use those. You're watching Doc Talk, and we're sure glad you joined us. Hey, folks. Welcome back to Doc Talk. Dr. Dan Thompson here with Dr. Nora Schrog. We're in Manhattan, Kansas, where Dr. Schrog is a veterinarian. She practices veterinary medicine every day. She is also a boarded pharmacologist, so is asked to do a lot of specialty type work internationally when it comes to antibiotics and treatment of cattle for different diseases. So someone who's got their boots on the ground in the trenches and writing papers that help set global policy is a great combination. You know, we're talking colostrum, and that prevents some of the antibiotics from being used.
Yeah.
But talk a little bit about, because, you know, there's a lot of different types of supplements. And so I'm going to assume that we use the supplements kind of in the same manner as we would, or replacements as we would from, you know, at the same timing and volume and things like that. But how are they different?
Yeah. So one of the main differences, and maybe the biggest point to make, is if you have natural colostrum available, it's always better than the supplement or the replacer, because it actually has some cells in it that we can't duplicate in the replacer. So we can get the immunoglobulin into the replacers, but we can't duplicate all the little types of cells and the special immune things. We know about some of them, we don't know about all of them, and then we have ways to produce some of them and not all of them. So the first point about supplements and replacers is that, first of all, if you have the opportunity to use natural colostrum, do that.
Yep.
And then, but supplements and replacers are really important when that's not available, or if you have a herd that maybe it's a group of heifers and you know you've been having some calves not get enough colostrum, then you can bump the quality up. So you're going to let that calf nurse the heifer or milk her out and make sure they get that natural colostrum. Then you're going to add a powdered colostrum to that.
So, well, you know, there's all different kinds. I've seen everything from egg yolk to dried plasma. So
there's three main ways it's produced. Mm-hmm. The egg-based products, which those are kind of older, and they don't have as good of efficacy. They don't bump the IgG up very much. So you want to look for something that's either colostrum-based or serum-based, and the serum-based seem to have the best absorption. So you want the right amount of IgG. So if you look on them, they'll say, you know, 150 grams of immunoglobulin or 100 grams of immunoglobulin. We want to get, if we're trying to replace it, if we think that calf got no colostrum, didn't drink at all, we're going to generally want to give them 150 to 200 grams of IgG. And so you can read those labels. It'll tell you how many grams of IgG are in the good ones. And the other difference is the USDA approves these, and their difference in label between replacer and supplement is that the replacer provides, they've got evidence, scientific evidence, that it'll bump the IgG level of that calf up. So gotcha. They'll bump their blood levels up. So I tell people one of the easiest ways to know you've got a high quality product, instead of stocking both a replacer and a supplement, it's kind of complicated. You can use the replacer
as
the supplement, and then you know you've got the highest quality product.
Yeah, because there's no problem going over.
Right. In fact, if you're going to err, you want to err on giving them too much.
Yeah. So are there any other places that we can use these replacers or supplements?
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about it being really important in that first day, but the other place we can use it is if calves get diarrhea, so they have some sort of intestinal disease, they won't absorb any of the immunoglobulin, but it will act locally. And so that's been a really valuable addition to treatment in those calves that are scouring, is we're going to feed them actually colostrum. And you need to talk to your veterinarian about how to do that economically. We don't always feed them the full dose every time, but it can really, really help.
Great information. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about when things don't go so good and failure of passive transfer. Hey, folks, welcome back to Doc Talk. Dr. Dan Thompson and Dr. Nora Schrog. We're here in Manhattan, Kansas, where Dr. Schrog is a veterinarian. It's somebody that's amazingly talented. There's very few people who can walk on the farm and be one of the very best practitioners and walk into a boardroom of executives discussing high-level antibiotic policy and be the very, very best in there as well. And so just an extreme talent, bilingual.
I'm happier when my boots are dirty, by the way.
Yeah,
but
I know.
The others,
we all are, but we need you in that boardroom. We need common sense, and she always provides it. So we're talking colostrum, and we've talked about all the good things and how everything's going to go just right. But we have what we call failure of passive transfer, right?
Yep. And so it's called a failure of passive transfer when that calf did not get enough in the first 24 hours. So it didn't absorb enough immunoglobulin, which means if a bacteria enters his bloodstream or a virus gets to him, he really doesn't have a good way to identify it for him to fight it. And so we have ways of measuring whether we succeeded or failed in getting enough immunoglobulin. And the easiest way to do it is to draw a little bit of blood.
Okay.
And then there's a couple of methods. One, we can do what we call a total protein. Mm-hmm. And that uses a little refractometer. Most every vet clinic is going to have that refractometer in their clinic. And we give it a cutoff value. We say, look, if they're greater than 5.5, they're probably okay. If they're between 5.2 and 5.5, they're kind of iffy. And if they're below 5.2, they're really bad. And some people use 5.5. So we can just tell, yeah, they probably got enough, or no, they didn't. And a lot of times it's more important to use that at the group level. So to measure like 10 calves out of your set,
yep.
And instead of just doing one, because it can be really variable calf to calf.
Yeah. And so we have the cutoff, but is there a time in which I need to do this?
Yeah, absolutely.
I have some people that would say, you know, one of the problems we ran into, they get calves and they measure it like 7 days after they're born.
Yeah, that's too long. So between 36 hours and 60 hours. If you get outside of that time, it really is hard to interpret. Because if it's before 36 hours, they may not have finished absorbing it. It might have gotten absorbed, but you may not be able to see it in their serum.
Yep.
And then if you're beyond the 60 hours, there's too many other factors. That calf has grown a lot. He may be starting to produce a little bit of his own. The other thing you want to be careful of is don't do it in a sick calf, because they're dehydrated. And it's incredibly hard to interpret then, because they'll look like they're okay, but if they're dehydrated, it's just because they're dehydrated, so it's more concentrated.
More concentrated in the blood.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are some of the things, I mean, if all of a sudden you walked out on a farm and we measure 10 calves and half of them have failure of passive transfer, what are you going to start talking to?
Yeah. So then we're going to really start talking nutrition of those cows leading up to calving, which is hard to do something about right at that time,
yep.
Right? So what we're going to do right now is we're going to supplement calves. So if we say, oh, you know what? we've got 50% that are failures, I think we need to just add a supplement. We know this group of cattle didn't produce good colostrum for whatever reason. We can work on nutrition next year. We can work on all that. But for right now, we're going to at least supplement
every calf that's born.
Yep. It's so important. And it's nobody likes to do it. You know, it's kind of a pain to mix up that colostrum, but it's one of the most valuable things you can do.
I think that when you're sitting here listening, there's an immediate step. If you're having, it's important to measure failure passive transfer. As expensive as these calves are,
yeah,
as what your revenue on your farm is worth, measuring that. And then there are ways to remedy it moving forward this year and next year.
Yeah, for sure.
It's great. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for watching Doc Talk. Remember, always work with your local veterinarian. And if you want to find out what we do at Doc Talk, you can find us on the web at www.doctalktv.com. I'm Dr. Dan Thompson with Dr. Nora Schrog, and we'll see you down the road.
At Merck Animal Health, we're shaping the future of animal health with pioneering science, connected technology, and insights-driven solutions to bring our customers an unparalleled portfolio of choices to improve cattle care and operational efficiency. We support you and your legacy by helping you meet the challenges of today with the innovations of tomorrow.